This free program is paid for by the listeners of Redwood Community Radio. If you're not already a member, think of joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Welcome to the local news. I'm Cynthia Elkins reporting for KMUD. In today's news, two significant developments in Pacific Lumber's bankruptcy case. We'll talk to County Clerk Carolyn Cernich about the upcoming supervisor election in light of Supervisor Radoni's death. And we'll also catch up with the new news director at KZYX&Z. All that and a lot more coming right up. A Eureka couple was reportedly tied up and robbed at gunpoint at their home Wednesday, and in an ironic twist, police ended up arresting one of the alleged victims for a different crime. Police say three suspects took an assortment of items in the robbery, including 65 marijuana plants and 6 pounds of processed and recently harvested marijuana. According to the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, the couple reported that the three men broke through the back door of their house at about 2 a.m. and ordered the couple to get on the floor. The men reportedly were holding handguns and struck the couple multiple times. Police say the couple reported that the men ordered them into the bathroom and tied them up. The couple then reportedly managed to free themselves, crawl out a bathroom window, and run to a neighbor's house. In addition to harvested marijuana and growing marijuana plants, police say the three men stole electronic equipment and a shotgun. All three suspects are still at large. In an ironic twist, police say they arrested one of the alleged victims after learning he had three outstanding felony warrants out of Virginia for conspiracy to sell marijuana, larceny, and money laundering. Daniel Jarrett was booked into the Humboldt County Jail, where he awaits extradition to Virginia. Well, two big pieces of news emerged today in Pacific Lumber Company's bankruptcy case. First, the Pacific Lumber Company and Maxam struck an historic agreement with their creditor Maxam and Mendocino Redwood Company. And second, another deep pocket player may be entering the picture. Attorneys for Pacific Lumber and Maxam announced that they will now back the MRC Marathon plan for restructuring instead of their own plan. The move marks the first time that Maxam Corporation has indicated an interest in stepping away from Humboldt County since taking control of Pacific Lumber Company in the 1980s. Pacific Lumber Company filed for bankruptcy in January of last year, and four separate plans for reorganization have been on the table in the last few months. It seems that now the options will come down to two, one from MRC and Marathon to continue logging operations on the 200,000 acres of forest land and to continue operating the mill in Scotia, and another from note holders that would auction off the land and all the company's assets. MRC and Marathon sweetened their offer to Pacific Lumber, which may have led to the agreement. In their new announced offer, MRC and Marathon would pay $530 million in cash for the company. Their previous offer totaled $500 million, of which $175 million was in cash and $325 million was in notes. KMUD News spoke with Sandy Dean, president of the Mendocino Redwood Company. Mr. Dean has been attending the bankruptcy trial in Corpus Christi and was extensively involved in the negotiations with Pacific Lumber Company and Maxam. I asked Mr. Dean what he thinks brought the company and Maxam to the table with them and how they managed to strike a deal.
I think that there was a lot of pressure on the Pacific Lumber Company and Maxim in the bankruptcy court, I guess really it's hard for us to totally be able to describe, you know, how that was playing itself out. I think what's important here is that by reaching a settlement with Pacific Lumber Company and Maxim, it allowed us some certainty on some aspects of putting together the transaction that allowed us to improve our allowed us to improve the offer that we're making to the note holders, and in doing that, we think we really moved an important step closer to a plan of reorganization that at least offers the prospect of being as consensual as any plan can be to try and make it through bankruptcy court. So we were grateful for Maxim and Pacific Lumber Company's support, and we're very happy we could get a settlement done. And we think we had a reasonable day in court, and are going to keep working away to see if we can't try and get something that would be complete in front of the judge that he would view as a plan that would be in the best interest of the creditors and all the stakeholders.
Do you think that the fact that Pacific Lumber Company and Maxim have hopped on board with you kind of seals the deal for your plan?
Well, the only thing that seals the deal for our plan is the final determination of the judge, but we think that it was a really important step forward. Previous to this, our plan was supported by ourselves and Marathon, who's the second largest creditor to this collection of businesses, and the Unsecured Creditors Committee and the state. So that's essentially four players in the courtroom that are supporting our plan. Now we add two more, so we're up to six. And really, the only players that are left in the courtroom is the note holders at one table and Scotia Pacific, the owner of the timberlands and the entity that owes the note holders all the money. So those two groups are, you know, closely linked in their interest here. But the balance of the players in the courtroom essentially are rallying around the Mendocino Redwood Company plan, at least based on what they all know today. So, you know, we think it was a really positive step forward, and we are fortunate that we could work out the settlement, but we still have work left to do.
Also in court today, it became known that another entity is looking to buy Pacific Lumber Company. That entity is the Harvard University Foundation, and the court allowed representatives to make a formal announcement in the courtroom today. KMUD News spoke with Community Forestry team member David Simpson, who is attending the bankruptcy case, and he explained a little about this possible new player.
There's a person named Jim Reinhardt, who's a forester. He's well known in forestry circles. He has a consulting business in San Francisco, and he's been working with Harvard. And we all knew Harvard was in the wings there. It was in the offing. So we, it was just a matter of time. And what has happened now is Harvard has found a mill partner. They became very aware that there had to be a mill partner in this deal in order to make it work. And they found Sierra Pacific. And so they arrived today with an entourage from Sierra Pacific, including Red Emerson, who is the owner of Sierra Pacific. He was here in court today. And their lawyer was allowed, although there was some debate about it, because they don't have official standing in court. You can't just walk in off the street and make a bid. But it was the judge decided it did no harm. And they didn't mention a specific figure. They just said it was going to be at least competitive. And they announced the existence of their coalition, or whatever, their group, and the partner, the mill partner, Sierra Pacific. And the note holders, of course, jumped on it right away and now are saying, look, you see, we already have an auction going on of sorts. People want this property. So this Mendocino Redwood Company, the price they were originally offering was way too low, and we still may even be able to get more money out of the deal. But Mendocino, I did chat with Sandy Dean, and he said he thought that the price they developed the price they were because the price they did, because it still gave them the option of cutting at the level that they had originally promised. All that being said, the Harvard entourage did leave today before the conclusion of this session, which will be tomorrow afternoon at 3:00, and nobody can quite interpret what that means. I think they feel strongly that they've made their statement and that it will stand and that they're in the running.
Well, I know that the community forestry team has had some discussions with Harvard. Is there
anything that you can tell us about that? And is there any chance or possibility that there might be some sort of either formal or informal alliance with Harvard and the community forestry team?
Well, first of all, let me preface this by saying that the community forestry team is still part of a consortium that includes the Nature Conservancy and Save the Redwoods League. And there have been talks. And the people who are involved in the Harvard plan are eager to work with our whole consortium. And they are eager to, they are interested in conservation easements, which has been one of the requirements, certainly, of the Nature Conservancy. They want to develop conservation easements. They want to permanently commit, you know, the bulk of this land to, basically, it would follow pretty much our formula, that they would commit, you know, at least 197,000 acres for the purposes of environmentally sound forestry. And probably to save the, you know, the Marbled Muirlet conservation areas would be directed by the Nature Conservancy, by Save the Redwoods League, ultimately into state ownership or state or federal ownership. So, you know, there are the other portions of this. The community forestry team has an interest in a stake in ownership at a you know, at a certain level, you know, a preliminary level, as it were. And all I can tell you at this stage of the game is that the doors are still open there. I think that at this stage of the game, at least if these were the players, if in terms of Humboldt County's future, either save the Redwoods League or the Harvard team would play out beneficially for our community. I think there's you know, there's plenty of hope out there that we're in for a better deal all around.
KMUD News also asked Mendocino Redwood Company President Sandy Dean about Harvard's announcement today.
Now, Harvard stepped forward and indicated that they're interested in making an offer if the land does go up for an auction. Do you think are you concerned that that somehow will affect the judge's opinion of your plan?
It's hard to say what that will mean to the judge. There was an interesting legal discussion about this in the courtroom before Harvard's attorney was offered the opportunity to speak. For somebody to stand up in a trial like this and simply address the judge doesn't constitute evidence in the trial. So although you know, the judge allowed Harvard to make a statement, it isn't actually admissible as evidence in the trial. What we heard the Harvard University lawyer say was that the Harvard University lawyer spoke just after it was announced how we were changing and improving our plan of reorganization, and the lawyer said that they were digesting what they learned to determine if the way we had modified our plan affected their level of interest, at least currently. And what we do know is that there was a fairly significant group of folks from Harvard in the courtroom in the morning, but all those folks left sometime before lunch and appear to be gone.
That was Mendocino Redwood Company President Sandy Dean. A Humboldt State Police officer was injured today while rushing to the aid of a man who was reportedly being assaulted. The Arcata Police Department reported that they were patrolling the Arcata Plaza with University Police at about 2 a.m. when they saw a parolee violently assaulting a man on the ground. According to a news release, Officer Rodney Dickerson was running to assist the victim when he fell and struck his head on the sidewalk. Police say that Officer Dickerson was knocked unconscious and suffered abrasions, a mild head injury, and a broken collarbone. Police say they arrested Brandon Cardamus of Eureka for fighting and a parole violation. Well, it's been a week since a car crash took the life of Supervisor Roger Rodoni, and many citizens have been wondering what his death means for the upcoming supervisor election. To help clear up any confusion, KMUD News spoke with County Clerk Carolyn Cernich, who explained the possible scenarios.
If a candidate receives 50% of the votes cast plus one vote in the primary election, they're considered elected at the primary. if no candidate receives 50% plus one of the votes cast in the primary election, then the top two vote getters go to a runoff. Now, if Mr. Rodoni received 50% plus one, he would be considered elected at the primary. And then at the date that he would take office, which would be noon on January 5th of 2009, that position would be considered vacant. And again, the governor would have the option of making an appointment to fill that position until the next general election, which isn't until 2010.
Governor Schwarzenegger would appoint someone to the position if Mr. Rodoni were to receive more than 50% of the vote, but if not, Mr. Rodoni's name would not appear on the November ballot, even if he received the largest number of votes. Ms. Cernich explains.
If he received not 50% plus one, but either the top number of votes or the second number of votes, his name would not appear on the ballot, and he would be replaced by the next highest vote getter. So in any case, his name is not going to be on the ballot in November because A, he won by 50% plus one, or B, he did not, and so his place, if it was appropriate, if he finished first or second, he would be replaced on the November ballot by the next highest vote getter.
Okay, and at this point, there is still time for write-in candidates.
That's right, until the 20th of May. If there is a write-in candidate that's interested in doing it, I would suggest that they contact our office. It is necessary that they collect some signatures, some nomination signatures, and there are some other, the declaration of candidacy, for example, needs to be filled out also. And without those documents on file with the elections department with the correct number of valid signatures by 5 o'clock on May 20th, votes cast for that candidate will not be counted. But if everything's in order, they're considered a qualified candidate.
County Clerk Carolyn Cernich. KCYX and Z in Mendocino County has a brand new news director. Paul Hansen started working at the station about 2 weeks ago and follows in the footsteps of their longtime news director, Annie Esposito. I spoke with Mr. Hansen about his new job today and asked him to tell us about his background and experience.
Well, I spent most of my career in commercial radio news in Portland, Oregon, and over the last 10 years, though, I worked out of the Portland market in Medford and Eugene, and I spent 8 years in television in Portland as a political and investigative reporter and documentary producer, and covered the eruption of Mount St. Helens in 1980. That's probably the biggest story I ever covered in my career. And saw the opening for the position here at KZYXNZ right after the first of the year, and sent a resume and was interviewed and joined the station in mid-April.
And so what do you think about the station there? It's pretty unique.
Well, it is very unique, and it's loved and respected by the listeners who are invested in this station, not just economically, but they pitch in, they help the station. Our volunteers are just great. They do so much for us, and like I say, people they have a real pride of I would almost call it a pride of ownership in this station.
Well, so you've been there for what, a little over 2 weeks now. You're starting to maybe get a little bit settled in. How's the job working out so far? What do you think about it?
Well, it's a pretty steep learning curve. You try to learn the, you know, political, socioeconomic, cultural history of a given region, and that just takes time. You try to learn as much as you can. Christina Honestet, who does our morning news here at KZYXNZ, is a tremendous resource for me because she knows the players and knows the issues. So to have someone on staff to help like that is really important. And, you know, you just do a lot of it on your own. You read as much as you can, talk to as many people as you can, and try to find out who's on first, for lack of a better description.
Hansen, Paul Hansen, the new news director at KZYX and Z. Well, a group of Southern Humboldt residents are getting together each week to chant for world peace. The mantra is an ancient one called the Gayatri Mantra, and KMA News spoke with Bruce Berger, the founder of Heartwood and organizer of the chanting, who told us more about the mantra.
Gayatri points to the primordial intelligence which underlies creation. Sanskrit is a very scientific view of the world where each god and goddess represents a force of nature. And so Gayatri is related to Mahatattva, great being, and the primordial intelligence. So by chanting Gayatri, we address that primordial intelligence in our own bodies, in nature, and in the cosmos.
And so why do you think that it's important for people to come together to chant this mantra and think about world peace?
Well, what's been happening is a lot of us feel like our political process has been hijacked, and certainly, you know, kind of many people call what's going on fascism. Fascism is a blending of a corporation and the state, that they've literally co-opted the political process. So the answer may be on another level. And you know, fascism wants to leave us disillusioned and alienated and feeling powerless. So if we can look to another level, we can really empower ourselves. Now, there's an amazing scientific literature on what's called the Maharishi effect, because the Maharishi Mahashyoga sponsored studies in creating world peace through meditation. In 1978, he had 1,400 meditators that he sent off to hot spots around the world for as much as 3 and 4 months. He had meditators in Iran during the revolution, in Rhodesia, in Nicaragua, and in Israel. And in each case, during the period of the time that the meditators were there, there was a dramatic drop in violence. In Israel, there was Israel-Lebanon war was going on. There was a truce called. In Nicaragua, there was a truce. And Rhodesia, violence dropped from an average of 16 deaths a day to three. And what I'd like to really say is that I'd like to invite people who are working for a more peaceful world to dedicate what they're doing to world peace, to really set that intention behind their own efforts. You know, you may be selling natural foods, you may be working at a child care center, you may be doing some healing work, but I'd like to invite you to consciously dedicate the peaceful efforts in your life, the work that you're doing in your life that is creating more well-being, that is creating more harmony, that is creating more wholeness, to consciously dedicate that to a peaceful world.
The Gayatri Mantra chanting happens every Friday from 5 to 6 at the Soham Yoga Studios. And again, that was Bruce Berger speaking about that. The Salmonid Restoration Federation is hosting a May Day celebration tonight with music of Casey Neal and the Norway Rats. Casey Neal is an eclectic musician who has played in this area for well over a decade. KMUD News spoke with Executive Director Dana Stolzman, who told us a little about his music.
Casey Neal is a fabulous musician. He has been performing in this area for 15 years now. And each year it's, you know, for a different benefit cause with a different constellation of musical players. This year he's coming with a fiddle player and a percussionist and another guitar player, I believe. And his music has really evolved over the years. He is a folk musician, but there's definitely punk and rock elements and a strong Celtic influence. He actually was one of the only unknowns at the time that performed on the Pete Seeger album with Bruce Coburn and Bruce Springsteen and Ani DeFranco, and apparently when Pete Seeger heard all the covers, he said, "Who's that kid? That's my favorite one out of all of them." So he actually has, two of his albums were recorded on Pete Seeger's label, Appleseed.
All proceeds from the Casey Neal Show will benefit the Salmonid Restoration Federation, which is a 22-year-old statewide group that is based right here in Redway. Ms. Stolzman explained a little about their work that the benefit will support.
Our mission is to protect salmon, steelhead, and trout throughout California through technical education, outreach, and advocacy. And the primary way that we accomplish that is we produce an annual conference that is the premier salmon restoration conference in the state of California. We have participants come from all over the Northwest. We've had attendees from Japan and Russia. And it's really looked at as an incredible opportunity for restoration practitioners, scientists, agency personnel, tribal members, students, for people to get together to network and learn about innovative habitat restoration techniques. So we truly are statewide. We've had the conference as far south as Santa Barbara and as far north as Fortuna. This year we hosted our 26th annual conference in the San Joaquin Valley, and next year we're going to be in Santa Cruz.
And so you also do trainings for restoration and other things. What can you tell us about that?
Well, we put on intensive field schools where people are in a residential facility with instructors, and we do on-the-ground trainings in fish passage design and implementation. We've hosted bioengineering field schools where participants actually have an opportunity to build willow mattresses or live siltation baffles and learn what that's about. We have done road decommissioning and culvert replacement field schools, and this year we have a lot on our agenda. We're going to be hosting a field school in San Luis Obispo County on the Central Coast, and we're going to be hosting the Coho Confab with the Trees Foundation in August, so stay tuned for details about that. And for the last few years, we've created an event called the Spring Run Chinook Symposium, looking at different populations of Spring Run Chinook, and we've started that in Butte Creek, which has a population that's really rebounded over the years because of increased in-stream flows. And last year we hosted that event on the Salmon River, and this year it will be July 10th through 12th on the Yuba River near Nevada City. So it's really exciting, and people say, well, how come this statewide organization is based here in Southern Humboldt? And, you know, truly the grassroots restoration field evolved in the Mateel communities, in the Mateel and Yale watersheds, and it's exciting to basically take some of these, you know, restoration design techniques and experience and share that throughout the state.
Ms. Stolzman said the Salmonid Restoration Federation has been working with several vineyards to restore salmon habitat, and that tonight you can enjoy the fruits of their labor.
One of the parts of this great May Day benefit with Casey Neal, there's going to be a vegetarian dinner starting at 6:30, and there's also going to be a wine auction. And one of the perks of being in the salmon restoration field is there actually are several vineyards, particularly in the Dry Creek area in Sonoma County, that are doing good work, habitat restoration work, and rebuilding stream banks. And they are very generous with their wine. We're going to have a wine auction with some really great, exceptional wines, so people can taste wines and then bid on wines as part of our wine auction.
That event with Casey Neal is tonight, Friday, at Beginnings in Bryceland. Dinner will be served starting at 6:30 p.m., and Casey and friends will take the stage at 8 p.m. And that is all for this edition of the Local News. Thank you for tuning in, and to Jim Kaiser for engineering. Joining you from behind the Redwood Curtain, this is Cynthia Elkins reporting for KMUD.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of Redwood Community Radio. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of KMUD or renewing if you've already joined. A regular yearly membership is $50, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.